Hail, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating FPL podcast. My name is Brandon. Josh is away this week, and it's just as well. I think we're both smarting from game week 4. An international break could heal all wounds. Sitting in for Josh this week is our good friend, Sam Danby Bailey. I've known Sam for years now. And Sam, you've lived all over the world, and now you find yourself in Norway. I have so many questions for you about what FPL is like, what football is like in Norway. Sam, first of all, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Yeah, thanks very much, Brandon. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Doing very well yourself.
Sam, you are known around the Always Cheating Circle for a very famous Black Horse Pub story. Of course, Black Horse Pub is Always Cheating HQ on Saturday and Sunday mornings when we go and watch the football there. Sam, you were coming through New York on work, and you met us at the Black Horse Pub, and it was very hot that day. I can't remember if it was the start of the season or near the end, but you were so warm in your pants that you went up to the bartender and you asked for something. Can you tell me what happened on that day?
Yeah, it was actually in September, and I came and joined you at the Black Horse. So I was having such a great day, and you're right, it was very warm outside. So because of the great company, I didn't want to leave. So I did go inside and get a pair of scissors and cut my trousers into shorts.
We'll get into this a little bit, but you have been playing non-league football for much of your life, which means you've got healthy looking legs. There was a table of women just next to us who were totally wrapped by what you were doing with your trousers. So even if they were having a bad game week, you lifted the mood that day by turning your trousers into shorts. So what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about early season clues, international break blues, and, as hinted, Norwegian news. And I think early season clues here is I've sort of doubted that I know what the story is so far in the Premier League. Who's good? Who's bad? Maybe my head's been in the sand, though. So we're looking for early season clues. And heading into that international break, we've got a lot of questions about, is it time to wild card, taking points hits for transfers? How much do we need to be thinking about overhauling our team based on what those clues may be? Before we do that, of course, we must pick the bones of game week 4. I finished on 69 points. I made one free transfer, and that was William Saliba to Udogi. So that was a net gain for me, Udogi coming in and getting the assist. But 69 points is three points below the game average, and I take my second red arrow of the season, dropping me down to an OR of 1.016 million. So I started the game week, Sam, just shy of 500K in overall rank, and I'm taking the hit. But there's not a lot separating the people in the 1 to 2 to 3 million range with the people at the top. Is that you, Sam? Are you near the top? You had a pretty good game week.
It seems to be a trend at the start of the year, so I do normally start off quite lucky. It does help with triple captain in first week.
Yeah, tell us yeah, about that, Sam. You do that week, season after season. Game week 1, you play your triple captain on whoever it may be. Salah, you did Erling Haaland this season. Do you feel like that has helped? I mean, it generally hits for you in game week 1. Does it help long term, though?
I think I like it because I don't enjoy the arranging when to play your triple captain. Is it the right week? I just like to get it out of the way. And I think at the start of the season, people are pretty eager to do well, to start the season off with a bang. And it worked out okay this year. I got 2 goals from Haaland. And generally, I kind of eases my mind going into the rest of the season where it's done.
Yeah, I mean, and some people went and did the triple captain on Haaland this week, game week 4. So a hat trick and an assist. You'll be a little jealous. So it set out your stall for the rest of the season. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Where does that put you after game week 4?
Yeah, I made 2 transfers this week. I did the very popular Mbeumo and Sterling transfers, Rashford out, and then a midfielder that wasn't playing. And then this week I finished on 97 points. So it went okay.
Yes. Where does that put you overall for the season?
So I went from around just over 200,000 and now I'm just over 20,000.
Jesus, so it's okay. Sam. Okay, you're doing all right. And you've been playing for a long time. I think this is, last I checked, like your 13th season playing FPL.
Yeah. It's, I normally tail off at the end, not in terms of I stop playing, but when things start to go bad, I start to make really bad decisions. So yeah. I'm really trying to avoid that going forward.
Yeah. A bit of an odd game week from my perspective. There were players that really went off. I mean, that would be the defining piece of game week four is the players who hit big, like Alvarez, Haaland, of course, who was universally captain. Shout out to Jeremiah in our friend league who captained Alvarez. You thought, hey, that could go pretty well, but he was overshadowed by Haaland. You also had the hat trick from Son, Ferguson, who's not necessarily widely owned, but somebody who we can talk about in terms of early season clues. And I look at my team and it's just drip, drip, drip of points. 7-pointer from Rashford next to Haaland. Those were really my only highlights. You know, assists from Saka and Udogi and Foden, but not much else. Nicholas Jackson and Ben Chilwell combining for 2 points. Andre Onana. So I was kind of licking my lips seeing everyone pained by Jordan Pickford's, you know, clean sheet wipeout followed by an own goal. He still manages to finish on 1 point, which in the grand scheme of goalkeepers this season, 1 point is nothing to complain about. I think there are a lot of other people out there who can complain about their keepers. Who do you have in goal there, Sam?
Yeah, I have Alisson and I've stuck with him since the start. I did actually start the season. Well, I planned to start the season with Edison, but getting the kind of the leak before the kickoff, first game week, hearing that Foden and Alvarez started, I quickly took out Alvarez, but I needed to remove a City player. So Edison was removed for Alisson.
Yes. Okay. All right. I appreciate that logic. So from you're a veteran. Do you feel, Sam, 4 weeks in, that this season feels different than previous? Does it feel basically a variation of the same thing we've seen over the last decade? Because as I've kind of been hinting at, I'm really struggling to get a bead on the vibe of the season. I mean, is it really going to be a season that's all about Spurs, which I would not have predicted from the start?
Yeah, I mean, last year they started well. I think they beat City in the first few games. I think they won their first three or first four last season. So it's not a surprise, or it's not the first time Spurs have started out well, but I think they definitely look better than they've looked. They look very well organized. They're exciting to watch. But other than that, I mean, in terms of FPL, there are some surprises in terms of who's scoring the top most points each week, who's the most point scorers overall. But generally, a lot of the players who are kind of scoring the most points now have been talked about or mentioned or recommended before the game weeks that are coming in. There's only a few players really that have stood out and been like, wow, we didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
But it's, every year it's kind of different to the year before, and this year is going to be different. And I think we're going into international break now. Same conversation as every year. Should I wildcard at the start? My team's not looking like it was supposed to. This is not what I planned. So, yeah. I mean, that's familiar.
Yeah. So, but 97 points in game week four, you have a great rank. You're nowhere close to wildcarding at this point, right, Sam? I mean, do you have any anxieties about your team heading into the break, problems that you feel like you need to solve, even though you're doing so well?
I mean, there's always players that I want to get in. I think this time of the season, the first international break is always a big talk around should we wildcard, should we not? I think it does help. You know, you can always remember the last round you had. So mm-hmm. I think if you had a bad round this week, people are certainly asking questions about, I need to pull the button. I need to do my wild card. But if you've had a good round, I think you can sit back a little bit and relax and kind of see how the international games play out. Yeah. So I'm certainly not thinking about it unless there's any critical changes.
Yeah, and there are still some interesting, even though the transfer window has shut for the Premier League, there are still movements that could happen. There is talk of Mo Salah still could be moving to Saudi Arabia, depending on what sort of talks happen between Liverpool and the Saudis this week. I mean, you're a Liverpool supporter, Sam. What is going on with Mo? Is Mo... I mean, Mo, speaking of drip, 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 this is like a always on faucet. And I was on Always Cheating last week saying, no, 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 I will never have Mo because there's no value at 12 and a half. But here he is assisting, scoring goals, just doing his thing. I mean, do you have room in your team? Should managers who do not have Salah be seriously considering changing their view on a player cost 12 and a half?
I think we still hold off. I think if they are going to come in with a lot of money or even more money than they've kind of bid before, I think Liverpool aren't going to easily keep saying no, to be honest. Yeah. His age, right. The money. It's so I think you hold, wait for Salah and see what happens over the international break.
Yeah, and that's the trick with, I mean, we see a lot of successful wild cards. Shout out to Patreon Luke, who wild carded into game week 4 and finished on 99 points. So that there were wild carders into game week 4 that proved the doubters wrong. The benefit of holding to this point is, like we said with Salah, you get to see if there is a conclusion to any of these stories. You get to ward off any injury news. Fingers crossed, none of our players get hurt during the break. There's just a lot of travel, and then we could see, on account of that travel, some rotation in squads in game week 5. I myself, with a below average game week 4, I'm not at all tempted to wild card because the problems I see in my team are pretty evident and easily fixable by sideways moves. What do you think about this, Sam? Foden, Alvarez, Haaland as a triple city that's just unanimous across all FPL teams.
Yeah, I've had him from the start, so I'm pretty happy. I mean, we're seeing different. Of course, now De Bruyne is out. Foden looks like somebody he's not really looked like before. We're really seeing him more often in the right places, being very creative. Yeah. And now Alvarez is on almost every set piece. He's taking corners. He's involved in free kicks. He's playing just behind the striker. I think it's not only just exciting to watch them play. You have quite a lot of skin in the game then if you've got these guys as well. So I think it helps.
The concern with, you know, we saw Doku come in and get his first start on the right. And Foden, I guess, positionally is on the left in that setup. Pep continues to bring more options into the squad. Grealish is not going to be on the bench every game. That's the bargain you make when you bring in the high-ceiling Man City assets. I guess from what we've seen so far this season, Alvarez and Haaland feel like the best picks, and Foden is in the punt territory. What would you say would be the conditions, Sam, of really seriously needing to or should be considering wildcarding during the break? Like, what kind of problems have you seen other managers running into that you're like, yeah, maybe this is the time to wildcard?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched upon it then. You said, you know, you're pretty laid back about it. You might have had a bad week. So you said you've had not your best week, but your team is pretty much full of all players we're going to talk about when you talk about who you should wildcard in.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it later, but I think if you've got critical players who are not playing, they're not playing in teams that are consistent, they're not consistently performing themselves. If you've got players who are maybe not even getting game time, you've got a weak bench. I think if all these of a combination together are starting to kind of be very evident and it's been kind of consistently not the round you want the last 4 weeks, then, you know, 4 or 5 areas that need to be changed, then maybe it is time to wildcard. Because, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are about it, but sometimes I find that if everybody else wildcards, I feel like I'm sat still and I come out of the international break where everyone gets a couple of game weeks ahead of me. So if you've got, what's your thoughts?
It may be that everyone is then a few steps ahead of you, but then there is always the contrarian in me that is like, oh, now I have a different team than everybody. I didn't wildcard in all of the new great players. I mean, it seems kind of dumb strategically because the players that people would naturally wildcard in are the ones that we're now discovering are the players to get. So logic would say they have the better team. But then I get moved into this position of hope. Well, I've continued to hang on to Rashford. Now Rashford is going to just blow everybody away. Now, I do wonder with Hoyland now being fit to replace Martial, who was just completely invisible during that Arsenal match. And Højlund looked decent coming in. Is this what Manchester United have needed to change the conversation around their fantasy assets? Does it sort of beef up their attack in ways that they needed to? One question here before we get into some housekeeping. It comes from our friend AJ, who says, I've seen an argument emerging in some circles that since season's point totals seem to be increasing every year, so people are finishing on higher total FPL points season after season, taking a 4-point hit is less harmful than it used to be. What are our thoughts? I don't know if you caught this question in the running order beforehand. I might be taking you off guard here, Sam, but I thought it was an interesting question to ask heading into the break, where points hits are on the menu for people who are insistent on holding on to their wild card. I mean, how are you with numbers here, Sam? Is it true that the 4-point hit is now like a 2-point hit, that sort of a thing? I mean, I tend to believe the scoring system has not changed. The scoring system is still exactly the same. Therefore, you cannot argue that a -4 is any less harmful or more harmful. It's just the same, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think I saw the question. I thought it was a super question. But for me, I think that I'm still, you know, overall, potentially, if we're getting more points every year, where, of course, it's a smaller percentage of your total score, but we want to make fantasy fun again, right? We want we're ever so less involved in focusing on our overall rank. We're quite more focused now on mini leagues, head-to-head leagues, these special leagues where if you come under the that weekly score, for example, last year to stand in, right? These special leagues that we really are focusing on these days. And yeah, maybe overall score, it is a smaller portion, but those people you're playing against, those more patient people, are still not taking as many hits as you, and you're still going to finish below the line in your mini league or head-to-head based upon that week's point score. So I think that I think still play the same. I wouldn't feel more encouraged to take any more hits. I take enough already, to be honest.
I mean, I think, yeah, the argument for hits is not the effect, the material cost to your overall rank or whatever. It's what is it going to take for you to move to a different player? Because I think what may have, shooting from the hip, Sam, but does it feel like with more money in the Premier League now than 10 years ago? More money means the teams lower down the table are better, meaning there are better FPL assets all around the league that we should be looking to chase as the season goes as fantasy managers. Taking -4 transfer hits might be more useful now because there are so many good assets to have. And if you free yourself up to just jump more quickly onto these assets through transfer hits, there may be a higher ceiling for you. So, right, does that make sense, Sam? It's less about your overall score. It's more about kind of like what you were saying, week to week. If you can take a -4 to get a short-term gain by getting an in-form asset, that might be a way to look at it.
Yeah, I think the scores are pretty much still the same as they were 10 years ago, right? People are still winning 1-0, people are still winning 0-0, people are still winning 5-1. I think there's also, you have these players now in FPL that are starting to kind of group together and be higher point scorers every year, a little collection. So I think it's not, you know, everybody captains Haaland every week. There's not really a question about captaincy anymore. So everybody already automatically has his points doubled mostly throughout the season. So I think it's easier to find those couple of players who are guaranteed to score high. But I still think that, I think less poor decisions can be made.
Good.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And we should change the make fantasy fun again slogan to make less poor decisions. I think that is that's pretty catchy on its own. I'm just looking at my overall point scores from seasons past. My first season in 2011-2012, my total points were 1,824. Man, that is a pretty poor showing from the BK Broilers. moving up to last season where I was 2,534. I bet there is a way to map captaincy scores and the universal getting of captaincy scores correct throughout the course of a season to having a high points total on average. So a Luis Suarez or Robin Van Persie, everyone's captaining them every week season. Last season, everyone captaining Haaland. Mo Salah, the two seasons before that. I wonder if that's the story that's being told as opposed to the one I was trying to cook up 5 minutes ago.
But I think also, I mean, now there's probably double the amount of people since then playing. True. So that means that there's you need to get more points to get a higher rank. So maybe we are really needing to get more points to finish the top of our main leagues to get higher up in the overall rankings. So maybe we are making more thoughtful decisions than we used to, because even doing so in the past, we probably would have still won our mini league or won against our work friends. And it's not the case anymore. My work league is tough.
Have you ever won it?
Came second last year in the last game week.
Okay, that's actually a good segue into our Norway segment and why that country is so bloody good at FPL. Before we do that, though, let's run through the top 10 of the Always Cheating Super League. Just go to alwayscheating.com and hit the league tab to auto-join the Super League. We're closing in on 25,000 managers in there, which is great to see. We've got a three-way tie for, you know, 9th, 10th, and 11th place between Ahmed Middenmeg, Bentley Joes, and Gustav Sandgren in 7th. It's Fabian Brown tied with Wesley Hughes. Two-way tie for 5th, Donald Power and Thomas Spencer. In 4th, it's Dave Monahan. I got that. Keith Flynn in 3rd. Up to 2nd, we've got Christopher MJ Carnes. And in the top spot, it's Ella Holmberg. 114 points. A great finish for Christopher Carnes in game week 4. Patreon, if you like what you hear and want to say thank you and get more FPL content in return, please visit patreon.com/alwayscheating. You get immediate access to the Always Cheating Discord, where we are talking strategy 24/7, and we're talking other things, FPL. You can also join a ton of mini leagues. Sam, you were just saying there how a focus for a lot of managers looking to make it more about fun. It's, let me join some mini leagues so I can focus not just on my overall rank. And I love what I see there on our Discord. You also get an extra podcast each week at the Lord Sorloth tier and above. Those are ad-free. Big thank you to our new Patreon supporters, Ellie Pinner, Stuart Woods, Jamie Browse, Emily Thornley. Emily is an admin extraordinaire on our Discord. Thank you, Emily, for everything you do over there. John Healy, Lachlan Hyatt, and our newest producer patron, Lolly. Again, if you want that extra podcast, access to the Discord and more, visit patreon.com/alwayscheating. Sam, take us to this far-flung country called Norway. You have lived in many different places around the world. Your football career took you from England to Wales to the States and now to Norway. How did you find playing football in Norway differed from, like, Wales and England in particular?
Yeah, it was very cool. I mean, I do have to say that I've not been playing professionally here. It's it is non-league, but I've been quite fortunate to in most of the teams I've played, you know, surrounded by ex-professionals or players who went on to be pros. And a lot of the boys, a little bit of a shout out to some of them, you know, they're still playing in some of the Europa Conference Leagues or Europa League with some of the teams. So nice. It's really cool to see them go on while I am the physique I am today.
It's those legs, yeah. Sam. Those legs,
yeah.
Like tree trunks. But so, are you graduating onto the coaching career? Are you doing the Phil Neville, Frank Lampard sort of move here?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing now for you know, almost 20 years in the adult game. So coming to Norway after an injury in Wales. One of the last games I played in Wales, I actually represented Wales at a university level, which is quite fun, against Ireland and Scotland. But yeah, I have been coaching. So when I first moved to Norway, I played with a team here. And then one of my first jobs here in Norway was also to coach the local professional football team, their under-19s team. So I have been doing some coaching since then. And I guess it's probably soon time to bow out. We'll see. I had a big injury last year. So maybe it's I'll probably never come back.
Now, you mentioned coaching coming to Norway. I mean, there are some very good Norwegian players in the Premier League. Martin Odegaard might be the best midfielder in the league right now. I'm sure that's a controversial thing to say. I mean, compare Odegaard to Rodri. They're doing kind of like two different jobs for their teams. If you had to pick between Odegaard and Rodri, who would you want in your team, Sam?
Odegaard, of course. He's super fun to watch. He's captain of Arsenal now, which is really impressive to see. It's a huge lift for Norway, especially. They're very proud of him. And is more attacking, which, although Rodri scores quite a few goals, it's nice to see a playmaker play football. So that's my preference.
Now, Erling Haaland, he's a Golden Boot winner. He's a treble winner. He's a UEFA Player of the Year winner. He's also Norwegian. He's a big guy, so I'm sure he's easy to spot if you see him in the country. But I happen to know that you've had a few run-ins with this man. When's the first time that you encountered Erling Haaland in Norway?
Run-in sounds aggressive, but no.
Yeah, not in a back alley of a bar, for sure. You wouldn't be podcasting with me right now. You'd be 6 feet underground, I'm guessing.
He's, super guy. So he's... of course, he was born in the UK, but his family's from here. His grandparents, this street I live on. But when I first moved to Norway, I remember watching him. He was probably 15, and he was playing for local club Brynne. And then he's got his professional debut during that time. I remember watching him. And then when I started coaching for the under-19s team, he was still at Brynne before he signed for Molde with Solskjaer. So I was very fortunate to have... that period, he was still training then before he went to Molde. And then kind of when he was at Molde, he used to come home quite often to see his friends, and he would come and join in, you know, Friday shooting drills. and he nearly beat me a few times as well.
So you did a shooting drill where you were in direct competition with Erling Haaland.
We would always join in with the boys. So Friday nights, we would always have shooting training. He would, I don't know if you've seen the video where he's training with Norway and he's trying to train in the stadium, and he just hits one on the volley from outside the box and it smashes into the top corner. He would do that then. He could hit a ball so hard wherever he wanted it. He was such a cool player to play. And you could even see it like 16, 17. He was kind of the boss on the pitch over a lot of the 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds.
I mean, does that kind of blow your mind that here is a kid that you saw at such a young age before he was known continentally, that you would be triple captaining him in a fantasy game?
No, but I mean, I've always said, I remember, not that I promote betting, but I remember sending a request bet to a lot of the betting organizations in 2016, 17, saying, you know, I wanted to put bets on Erling Haaland playing in a Champions League final, playing in the Premier League. So I was pretty confident. You knew he had something. There's one funny story where he played in the Norwegian system. You play for a club, but you can also play for the first team and the second team. And it was in the news in Norway recently, the last year, where he was having his usual one-to-one fights with the defender. And I remember the defender said something to him, and he turned around and said, I don't know what he said exactly, but he basically turned around and said, look, in 3 or 4 years, you're still going to be here, maybe not at all, and I'll be in the Premier League. at like 16, 17, he was saying things like that.
Yeah. What a legend. Now, you mentioned he has roots in the town where you are currently based, Sam, and you were just telling me an amazing story about how he gives back to the community there, particularly the youth. I mean, can you talk a little bit about what he's done for the kids in town and their passion for the sport?
So it's certainly a football loving town. Especially where we are here, and you see kids, you know, they used to have Molde t-shirts, shirts, then they all had Dortmund shirts, and then now they all have Man City shirts with Haaland on the back. So
fair weather plastic fans in Norway, come on now.
Yeah, yeah. But so there was a video recently where he came home while the kids were training, and he went over and he it's a funny video where he refuses to sign the Liverpool shirt. But he just gave over 1,000 kids, every child under 12 that plays football in this municipality, a gift, which is really cool. So they were very excited. All the kids were really excited to get the gift. It was a football, a football kit, a bag, water bottle. So he's certainly, everybody has a favorite team plus Erling. And that's what it's like in this town. It's they're super proud of him, and he's a super, down to earth, remembers where he's from kind of person. And nobody's got anything bad to say about him. Super, super guy.
That's amazing. I love hearing those stories where you see that these people with superhuman abilities are really good, down to earth people. So then let's talk about Norway as a whole. You've been there for years now. You're putting roots down. What have you learned about why Norway is obsessed with FPL? We were talking to our network Blue Wire, and they were like, yeah, this is weird. We don't see this with any of the other shows on our network. Your top download countries are the United States, the UK, and Norway. It's predominantly that network is like NFL football, NBA, college sports. And then here we come in with the Premier League show, and we're big in Norway. So what is it about Norway that just breeds this passion for the Premier League and the FPL game?
Yeah, I'll probably be careful what I say. I'm going to probably find out this week who is listening that I know, if it's so popular. But I think the generally as a nation, they are super competitive. They love all sports, whether it's winning an Olympic Winter Olympics. It could be, a lot of the football talent that's coming through. A lot of the Olympic track athletes, some of the world records that are coming out now are from people even from up the road here too. They're a super competitive nation. They love their sports. They love football. Of course, in the 90s, they had, for example, Erling's dad was playing, Alfinger Holland was playing in Leeds, Forest. They've got a lot of players, and they support them pretty much throughout their careers, and they're really proud of them. But it's their competitiveness for sure. I mean, without going into some financial psychology, they're also super at saving money. So maybe that means they're very good at the long game in FPL.
Yeah, I hear you.
So it could be a psychology thing, but I think they pride themselves on doing really well in whatever it is competitively. And I mean, in terms of Norwegian kind of, I don't know if I say it right, but like Janteloven is this thing. It's like where Norwegians, like, it's like a law in Norway. It's like, you're not better than anybody. You've got to work hard to do well. But when it comes to sports, they just completely ignore it. And they are just, we're going to win everything. So it's a true credit to them. And it's been super being around them when they're like that.
Well, I will be just from the sheer star wattage of getting both Odegaard and Erling into the next major tournament. I am rooting for them and qualifying for their Euros. I expect they'll be a shoe-in. Not to jinx them, but I mean, what are their chances of qualifying for the Euros this time around?
I'd like to say very high, but since I've been here, they've kind of almost nearly made it quite often, even the playoffs last time. So, but of course, I think, I'd really love them to do so. But I think they always, somebody will get injured or they'll maybe get their own fixture, or they have a poor away game. I really hope this is the year where they can really show everybody what they've got on the big stage.
Let's do it. Well, big shout out to all of our Norwegian listeners out there, or any expats like Sam who are listening from Norway. We're really proud to have you as part of the Always Cheating community. Sam, let's take a quick break and come back and talk about some early season FPL clues we've picked up along the way as we head into the international break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.
All right, welcome back. I'm here with our good friend Sam, and we're going to talk about Chelsea. Okay, you brought in Raheem Sterling going into game week four. You had stars in your eyes, Sam. You thought, man, this guy is just like a machine. He didn't get the call up for England, I believe. So he'd be angry. There's nothing better than an in-form, angry attacking player, and Raheem Sterling blew it. I mean, he blew it in some ways less than Nicholas Jackson. I mean, just on the open goal that Nicholas Jackson had against Forest near the end of that game, Raheem Sterling should be at least walking away with 5 points from that game. So how dirty was Raheem Sterling done by Nico Jackson and the rest of this Chelsea side? Or, based on game week four, Sam, are you worried about all of your Chelsea picks?
Yeah, I mean, I have Sterling and Jackson. And if he scored that, I would have hit over 100 points. But I know. But
What if?
Sterling, I mean, he's only returned in one game, right? So I think we all should have known what we were getting ourselves into. And I think he's one of those players where, you know, how do you find somebody who's going to go off? And let's be honest, I mean, he looked good in the first few games. He looked exciting. He was getting on the ball a lot. He was running at people. He was getting in dangerous areas. For me, that is someone looking like they're going to do well. Next game week, yeah, he did. He scored two. And so it's understandably that people got excited, to be honest. Stats people would say he's overperforming. Fair enough. I'm going to keep him. I think he's somebody that I will continue to enjoy watching at the moment while he's playing like he is. And
just considering the discussion, to interrupt you, Sam, about Chelsea is fixtures. Forget how poor some of their players may look and what does Sterling have on the horizon. It's Bournemouth away when they come back from the break. And again, Sterling's going to be fresh, having not traveled. Villa at home, and then Fulham Burnley, which is an incredible game week 7, game week 8 doubleheader. So it's all there, and I agree with you. I think if you've gone so far as to bring Sterling in, you've got to give him another week or so to reward you for that. I don't think the same is true of Nicholas Jackson. Concern with Nicholas Jackson is, I mean, am I overstating it, Sam, to say he's been spectacularly awful?
He's also quite exciting to watch.
Okay, Mr. Nice Guy over here.
Yeah, I think, but that doesn't make him a good fantasy asset. Sure. Of course not. I mean, he looks a little bit like Nunez did last year. I know probably everyone's saying that, but he looks like he knows how to play football. He was very good in preseason. I watched quite a lot of him in preseason, but it's just not working out for him. It's not like the ball's not coming to him either. So it's difficult to defend him because he's getting in very good areas himself. He's getting in super places where he can score, kind of, you know, high level chances, but they're just not going in. It seems like he looks like he's playing with a good football player who's nervous or kind of, I don't know if. But so it's kind of going a little bit against what you expected of Chelsea's discussion today. But I mean, if you haven't got him, I'd certainly say don't bring him in.
So I guess we zero in on a hold for Nicholas Jackson. I tend to agree. He's not been effective at all as a fantasy asset. I'm going to try to adopt your positive attitude here, Sam. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he is an albatross around the neck of your fantasy team. You see players like Ferguson or even Darwin to resurrect him. You just mentioned his name, doing so much better than Nico Jackson. I think if you've got, say you're in my position, I've got two free transfers to spend. I'm very seriously considering Jackson to Alvarez going into game week 5. It just feels like a very sensible move. I think if you can sensibly dump Jackson, that's great. I think the fixture argument for Jackson, I don't feel like it applies anymore just based on what we've seen. On top of the fact that Jackson could have a Darwin Nunez-like problem where now with Cole Palmer at Chelsea, Pochettino does have a different option in the number 9. Now, Cole Palmer could play on one of the wings wherever Sterling isn't playing, and all kind of like feeding into Nicholas Jackson in the number 9. But I could also see Pochettino saying, I need to rescue Jackson from this situation. It's not doing him any good to be out there. Let's kind of train him back into form somehow without him under the bright lights of the Premier League. So I'm worried about some Richarlison-esque rotation happening here with Nico Jackson in the next few weeks. Chilwell, I guess he's the last thing that we would need to discuss about Chelsea. He's getting subbed early. He's being played like full on the wing, not even at fullback. I mean, what's gone wrong here with Chilwell? Just bad luck?
Yeah, he's pretty much got a bit of a free roll on the left. Could it be that the formation that he wants to play, Chilwell doesn't maybe fit in it, or that he doesn't trust him as a defender because he wants him so high up? I mean, it's I know we brought him off on the weekend again and kind of tried to bolster the attack. Maybe Chilwell could have been part of that attack the way he goes up and down. Maybe Chilwell signaled to say that he was tired or that he was feeling something. Who knows? Would you hold him if you had him?
I think so. I think so. I don't think he's like a rotation concern. So I think we hold him. If I'm looking to make any transfers now, it's the midfield and forward because that's where we're seeing the in-form player. Speaking of form, Daniel Brubaker asks, how good are Spurs? Ange Ball is truly a thing. So are you a believer in Big Ange and what he's doing there at Spurs? Is this for real?
I hope so. I mean, they lost Kane. So, I mean, there was talk of them finishing in the bottom half before the season. But they are, again, you know, they're very fun to watch. They've brought in Madison, who definitely is helping that, and he's doing really well in the fantasy terms as well. But we are still 4 weeks in. I think we need to take it easy with Spurs winning the league. But I do think that they are certainly the team to get some players in from if you don't already. Sure. I want some of that.
Yeah. Give me that. So yeah. if we take the theme of early season clues, I think the early season clue for Chelsea is shrug emoji. Who knows what's going on there? It's still chaos. The early season clue for Spurs is maybe we don't know what the floor or ceiling for the club is in their first season under Ange, but we do know the clues do all point to James Maddison as being an incredible, incredible fantasy pick. So I think Udogie as a 4.5, he's probably going to be up to 4.7 or 4.8 by the time the break is over, defender, and Maddison. That is, the dream is real. Crudengold wants to know, is Son worth rushing in to avoid price rises? So it's not like Son didn't do this exact same routine last season, Sam, where he was off his game, not in great form, comes through, scores a hat trick, and then what? Then what happens? So where do we go from here with Son?
I think it was off the bench last year, did it?
Yeah, it was. But, against Danny Ward.
I would like Son. I don't really have any way of getting him in, but I think, especially if you have a chance to get him in, if you're wild carding, I think coming out of a wild card without him would be a waste of a wild card a little bit.
Really? Interesting. So you're all in on Son, it sounds like.
Yeah, but I'm not going to make any heavy changes to get him in myself. I just think, he's playing in the middle a little bit now. I don't know if that will change now.
Yeah.
Johnson, I don't know what their plans are for there. But I mean, who are you going to bring out to bring him in? He is quite expensive. So I think you probably need a team makeover or at least two transfers, even Bruno or Rashford, with Son's 9.1. Yeah. So it takes a lot. Salah could be a great move down. If you want Salah, any moves?
Spurs have Sheffield United coming off the break in game week 5. And then it's Arsenal, Liverpool, back to back. So it feels like overinvesting in Spurs. Now, this is where we have to repress the conservative fantasy manager in us. I don't think the situation is so with Spurs where you have to think of it that way. I think you're right, Sam. If you're doing wild card, you have to believe in Spurs probably for a longer period of just 3 to 4 game weeks, because their ceiling in the good fixtures is going to be high enough to reward you. So I think that that's an interesting triple on a wild card. It would be Son, Maddison, and Udogie. Am I missing any other player that you'd want in?
Not for me. I think you're absolutely correct. I think if you're wild carding, as you said, there's Arsenal and Liverpool, but then Luton, Fulham, Crystal Palace. So I'd say if you're going to bring them in, have an idea of where you might move them if it doesn't work out. If you don't have them and you want to bring them in a few weeks to wait and see, then maybe have a plan for that too, because I think there is a chance that they could keep going. Maddison especially, he's not that expensive compared to some of the Rashfords, Bruno, Son. I think he would be the one for me that I would focus on getting in most.
All right, Sam, let's move into kind of like trend talk. I think Spurs and Chelsea are the two big clubs that need tackling right now. In terms of larger trends in the game, we've got a few questions. Taylor Ferguson asking, just brought in Mbomo and Sterling, exactly the moves you made, Sam, and I feel like I've been a week behind all my transfers. Who would you get for the upcoming 3 to 4 weeks? And Jay Dizzle also further frames sort of how do we think about where we are in the season going into the break. This season, it has really felt like it's vital to get on the form players as early as possible. With so many good FPL options out there, your window to get on board with form players can be very short and they become highly owned and template. My question is, how do you work out who the next high scoring player is going to be in order to beat the bandwagon? How much does data eye test play a part? At the moment, I see this as one of the few ways of rising quickly in rank. Sam, this is, I think, exactly what Dizzle is getting at, is exactly what we're talking about in terms of the -4 hit conversation of how quickly can you move, and transfer hits might not be an obstacle you should consider, because I think Dizzle is right to a degree. You're going to climb based on how quickly you can move to the right players. Now, that's easy to say. It is very difficult to do. Anyone can. I was just watching that Seinfeld clip of Jerry. He's trying to rent a car at the airport. And he's like, yes, I have a reservation for a mid-sized car. And the clerk is like, I have your reservation, but I don't have the car. We ran out of cars. And Jerry's like, I don't know if you know how reservation works. Everyone can take reservations, but you have to hold the reservation. So we're kind of in that territory here with our fantasy teams. Anybody can transfer guys in. The trick is to transfer guys in who score points. So with Mbomo and Sterling, you're feeling pretty good about those moves. Sam, as holds, who else should we be feeling good about over the next 3 to 4 weeks who we haven't talked enough about?
Yeah. I mean, the moves he made there, I think, well done. I think Mbomo is kind of the highest involved in terms of expected goal involvement, and I think he'll continue to be so. Brentford have expected to do well in the next few fixtures too, so he's definitely staying. I think it's a really cool question, but you know, how do we get the bandwagon players before they are doing well? Mm-hmm. I think you know, it's kind of like putting a bet on, right? Nobody screams about the bets they've lost, right? When they've won a football accumulator. Yeah. And I think it's the same with these players where, okay, we're very happy when we brought a player in early and they do well, but how do you know which ones? And it's definitely a combination, as you said. I love to watch games. I like to see which players are looking exciting, which ones are looking like maybe they're not up for it, but like they're going to continue to be, you know, the way the teams are playing. Consistent teams with consistent players. So looking for that consistent play in the consistent team. And I think it's not always about getting on the player as early as you can. It's about not sitting still. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, for example, the top 15 point scorers so far in the whole of FPL, there's only a couple players that are really more than 26% owned. And if you go even further to the top 50 top scorers in the Premier League, mm-hmm. in the Fantasy League, the pattern continues. So it's like, it's very early. So it's not like, you know, some of them are not going to be the top scorers at the end of the season, like Rodri or players, but you know, we've all talked about Son, we've all talked about Bowen, Alvarez, Madison, Erdogan. These are players that we've talked about doing well and have been the players to get involved in. But if you look at a lot of the players that are doing well, they're not really that highly owned yet anyway. So I think it's about not sitting still when we are confident that a player is going to do well, and kind of thinking that it's not as late as you think it is to get involved. You know, I think chasing bandwagons or chasing somebody that's not yet doing well, but you think will, I think that more likely would lead to that you're going to pick more players that you think are going to do well, but turn out not to, and then you end up having to use a transfer to get them out again. Yeah. But look at Bowen. He's scored 30 points. It's only 4 game weeks in, but he's still less than 10% owned. That, to me, if you're watching the game, you'd be like, wow, he looks very effective. He's getting in the right places. His stats look well, and he's not really that highly owned. Maybe I take a differential here with the third highest point scorer continuing on through the season now.
West Ham looks so good. They are done dirty by the upcoming fixtures, where they have City, Liverpool, Sheffield United in game week 7, and then Newcastle, Villa. Interesting run. So I think maybe it's a kudos to everybody who got Bowen in for game week 4, and then maybe just kind of count your lucky stars. But we'll see. I'd love to be proven wrong. I mean, there's nothing about this West Ham team that screams lucky or just hit like a purple patch. They seem to be playing very fluently. Paqueta, who is a player, I think they expected this level of Paqueta when they brought him in. And yes, I'm going to say his name about 5 different ways throughout the course of this podcast. I think they expected these levels from him when he came in last season at West Ham. And now he is, I think, fully recharged after that, the interest from Man City, playing in the Brazilian World Cup squad. And I think he's raising the level of that West Ham midfield, and it's benefiting everybody around him. So I don't want to be a doubter of West Ham. I actually, based on what I've seen, I'm a believer.
If you look at, just throw one out there, what do you think about March? Not the month, but
yeah, it's cold and miserable, to be honest with you, Sam. I like him. I I have come full circle on Brighton, where at the end of last season, I was like, wow, what an incredible campaign they've mounted. De Zerbi, most exciting manager in the Premier League. I have to fade them next season because they're going to lose some of their best players. They're going to be fighting on a European front and so on. So I became my typical negative self. Everything I have seen since I made that prediction has gone the opposite direction. De Zerbi continues to just put the fear of God in all these players. Like, do right by the system. The system will reward you. And every player is doing the business. Even with a striker rotation. I mean, Pedro and Ferguson are benefiting from a Welbeck injury where we've got one less forward player to worry about in terms of rotation. It looked like De Zerbi liked Welbeck to start the season. But March was the forgotten man because of injury. I like him. Do I like him enough to actually spend a transfer on him? I guess the answer to that would be no, because Matoma weirdly still, even though he's scored far fewer FPL points than March thus far, is the more involved man. Mm-hmm. And I think he's less likely to be subbed, Matoma is, during these longer and longer matches. So if I'm going to spend a transfer on a Brighton winger, why would I take March over Matoma? Is it just to be different?
I don't know. I mean, on your wild card, would you consider both?
Well, okay, Brighton fixtures: United, Bournemouth, Villa, Liverpool, City, and then once we get to game week 10, Fulham, Everton. I don't know. Fixtures don't seem to be terribly relevant to Brighton right now. You know, they're going to have their occasional match against Wolves where the system just breaks down and they get the floor wiped with them. I guess that's just the way it's going to be with De Zerbi. It's mostly feast, but when it's not mostly feast, it's a famine. So I guess you really do have to stick with Brighton on a wild card. So I guess by the nature of these questions about how do I beat the bandwagon, beat the template, I guess that is the case for March, is I'm going to go March when everyone else is going Matoma. Because, you know, the reasons I'm going Matoma, I guess, are very marginal. You know, Matoma's going to play a few more minutes than March. Matoma's going to be just a little bit, he's going to be more involved, but in terms of assist, March seems to have more goal threat than Matoma at this point. So I guess by that argument, the signs do point to March being an interesting level up on a wild card squad. So talk to me a little bit about Odegaard coming back to the Norwegian tip. I mean, we've already basically big upped Martin as an incredible player for Arsenal, but he is the one who I think is getting dropped by a lot of fantasy managers who are shying away from Arsenal. Arsenal just, while they're putting points on the table, they're not the high-flying version of themselves that we saw at the start of last season. So some managers out there started with Odegaard and Saka, or maybe it was a double of some kind, sometimes including Martinelli, and it seems like Odegaard is the one losing out. Is that the wrong way to approach Arsenal right now, Sam?
I think for me, I would go Saka first. Saka, then Odegaard, then Martinelli probably. But I think he's involved in everything. I think, you know, Arsenal need to find him quite often for anything to happen. Looks like he's going to be on some penalties. We don't know how many yet, but it looks like he's going to be getting some extra points from penalties. He's likely to play. I know he came off yesterday, but he's likely to play a lot, being the captain. I think they know how important he is. So I think that if I had him, I would not take him out.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk about Ollie Watkins with you, Sam. Let's try it from this perspective. You, as a football player, now, as you've clearly stated, not at the professional level, you are not Ollie Watkins. But what you know of player mentality, what you know of the position that Watkins is playing, what have you learned about Ollie Watkins, either over the last few seasons, or what is going on with him? And is he just a bad fantasy pick at the moment?
He's not someone that I'm at all thinking about bringing in.
Yeah.
He's very exciting to watch because he's young. He's very eager to score. He's very eager to get on the ball. He's super confident. Kind of if somebody enters final third, he's super confident in terms of he really wants the ball. We saw on the weekend, I think Bailey got in the way of him, and you could see that he was ready and he wanted the ball. So he's not shying away from kind of taking that striker responsibility. He's super consistent in FPL, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
He's might not be scoring so much, but he's going to get you an assist. Is he the new Harry Kane, but for assists? No, he's not someone I'd be bringing in.
Yeah.
I think I need to see more. I need to see Villa. They're kind of getting results, but I'd need to see him being the focal point completely in terms of, getting more goals and being the, even if it's just one goal a game, the reliable striker that you'd probably want from somebody in your fantasy team.
All right. Asking for a friend, Sam, if I had Nicholas Jackson and Ollie Watkins, who do I get rid of during the break? Now, it's interesting, right? Because Nico Jackson isn't scoring any points. Ollie Watkins is kind of scoring points. But you've got some plum fixtures for Jackson. And Villa just look a little ragged, I have to say, at the moment.
Gosh. I would say I would remove Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And only because of, is he going to start
getting
a few less minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really the interesting thing with him. Okay, so quick note on defender frustration. Insane lack of clean sheets. Two clean sheets kept this weekend. One was by America's own Matt Turner. Of course, we all had Forrest away at Stamford Bridge picked to be one of two clean sheets this weekend. My God, that is a painful one. And then it was Liverpool hosting Aston Villa, kept a clean sheet. Sam, you love Trent Alexander-Arnold. I'm clearing the lane. What do you want to say about this young man? Should we all have Trent Alexander-Arnold? Because so far what I've seen of Trent is great job keeping a clean sheet this game week. But the guy, he's shooting like Darwin Nunez at the moment.
That's not bad.
Well, okay, like he's shooting like the generally conceived idea of Darwin Nunez, not Nunez from the last couple of weeks. He cannot hit the frame.
No. I do like Trent, and I've stuck by him from the start. So I did get Alisson and Trent's clean sheet this week. And I think generally, mm-hmm. who's gonna get clean sheets? I think it is probably gonna be your usual candidates. City, Arsenal, West Ham, Liverpool, Palace, Spurs. Teams at the top are most likely to win games, and they're the teams that are most likely to not concede.
Yeah.
Right? Is it that simple? But I think chasing clean sheets, I think Eric's got a great point. Maybe we shouldn't be putting too much in there, but I have Trent. He has been a liability the first three games, but I think he maybe positioned or was told to play a little bit different yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think it worked because I felt like he was in better defensive positions, but also still going very far forward when he got the chance. And he's on every set piece. Okay, Robertson actually takes corners from both sides sometimes, but I'm not going to get rid of him, but I probably wouldn't recommend bringing him in yet.
While we're talking about clean sheets, we're obliged to talk about goalkeepers in every episode. And it's insanity out there. I mean, people with Onana, such as myself, 2 0 pointers in a row. It's horrifying. Jordan Pickford has been a nightmare for people who just thought, hey, that 4.5 keeper is going to get a lot of save points. It's not proven true. You've gone premium with Alisson. Is it a question of just pick one between Ederson and Alisson for your goalkeeper? Is that where we've landed? Or would you spare a thought for, the Fleckens of the league?
Yeah, I would say don't be racing in the expensive goalkeeper, especially Liverpool. I don't mind only because I'm uncertain of who will play outfield the whole time in the attacking positions. Mm-hmm. City, I would probably not go for Ederson because he's wasting a City slot.
Yeah.
But so the other ones that I've kind of got written down, you know, Turner's price is quite attractive with Areola, maybe. Leno, okay, they've conceded quite a lot of goals, but no, someone around that price point that's going to play, they're going to get safe points, maybe, you know, they're going to get a few clean sheets. Spurs, what about their defense? Right.
Yeah, I think Spurs defense is maybe the concern with Spurs defense is it's going to fall victim to Postecoglou's very attacking style. And while I think there's the Spurs defense maybe has overperformed a little bit. And just looking at Udogie as a pick, that's the fantasy strategy is goalkeepers are almost worthless to your fantasy squad because you can only get points one way, basically, and it's through a clean sheet. Obviously, you can get save points and once a season get lucky with a pen save, but basically you're relying on clean sheets in that position. If you have a team like Spurs where you've got an option like Udogie who's very attacking, you unlock another few routes to those fantasy points. So that would be my case against the Spurs keeper. And I want to save Onana from his fate, his fantasy fate. I want him to be my guy, basically. And I'm pinning it all on Hoyland. I think Hoyland being healthy, and this is some real, like, I'm not a Manchester United fan, but this is just like fan talk of just like this hopeful, this one guy, he's going to flip the script. He's going to change it all. But Manchester United have just, they've been lacking not just a something. They've been lacking a lot of something. What have you been making of Manchester United?
There's one thing nobody could have predicted was that Maguire and Johnny Evans were going to finish a game together against Arsenal.
Yeah, surreal stuff. That would basically be me and you, Sam, being in central defense.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think in terms of football talking, I think Højlund looked good. He looked really exciting. He was really interested in both going in behind and coming for the ball. He looks bloody strong. I think he's a great signing. Maybe that helps United, but I think if they won the game yesterday, I think it would have been a miss. Kind of, it would have swept all of their problems under the rug. So I think they definitely need to. There's a lot of work to do there, but I'm a Liverpool fan, so it's quite nice to say. I'm not going to have Rashford or Bruno in my fantasy team, but they still kind of scare me not having them. Yeah. So they're certainly still capable of scoring goals, still capable of winning games. I don't think they're going to win the league, but I think they're probably going to finish up there.
Let's close things out, Sam, with sort of more of a philosophical, psychological question from Stephen Curtis, who asks, and I feel this one, Stephen. I think it's a good question. On paper, my team has looked good, but my scores have not been there. My transfers have been Foden in game week 3, Sterling and Madison this week. Very disheartening. I mean, and Stephen here, as a sidebar, is noting, particularly with Foden and Madison, players who have been delivering. But Stephen goes on to say, very disheartening. Have to keep reminding myself it's a marathon. Wanting to wild card after the international break in game week 8, but it's looking sooner rather than later. So what do you have to say to managers who are frustrated, who have been making sound decisions based on good data, good eye tests, you know, casting their lot with good clubs and good players, and here they are just falling 25 points behind in their mini leagues. Is this a time to panic and say I need to totally reshape my approach to the season? Or, like, for me, I do think what you said earlier, Sam, about you just can't stand still is really important. And that's probably the most important thing. You have to do something, but you don't have to then go and do everything, like overhaul your entire team. I think Steve's pointing out he's got some really good players in his fantasy squad. So the whole idea is don't panic, but don't stand still, right? What do you think?
I mean, I think he's given sound advice to everyone. If I'm honest, I think he said, you know, my team looks good, which is reasonable. He's made very good transfers, I think. he's also giving sound advice to anybody that's feeling the same, because it is true. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So you need to calm down, assess the information that you've got. But it'd be interesting to see what the rest of his team looks like. And, you know, is there other players, 4 or 5, 6 players that also need to be moved out? Then maybe it is time to wildcard now. But it seems to me like Steven has control and knows how to make the right changes, really. Yeah. Just continue doing that.
Yeah, just like keep moving, keep tweaking, and it will come together week to week. Shiv asks, are you wildcarding over the break? Neither of us are. Between me and Sam, I don't know about Josh. Tune in next week. If so, who would be straight in the game week 5 deadline? I think this is really the spirit of this episode, Sam, is who are the players who, you know, after 4 game weeks are the guys, apart from Erling Haaland. You mentioned Son straight in on a wild card. Give me like 2 or 3 other players who just like you'd be ridiculous to not have these guys.
I'd say the 3 Spurs players, if I'm honest. Yeah. I'd say, what about Trippier?
Now, come on with this. I've heard this name mentioned in these FPL streets, Sam. I don't get it. The guy costs, what does he cost now? 6.5 million? Let's look it up. Why is Trippier so expensive? I'm going to write a whole book about it. 6.5 million. Let me read you the scores from this kid. 2-2-0-1. Yeah, the fixtures do turn for Newcastle, but speaking of ragged-looking teams, Newcastle, it's worrying, I think, what we're seeing. Now, this goes hand-in-hand with what I'm trying to create this narrative around Manchester United, because the same thing is pretty much happening at Newcastle. They brought in some decent players over the summer. Newcastle is not suffering from injuries the way that Manchester United is, but I feel like there's some gelling that still needs to happen, and Newcastle will be all right. But tell me why I'm spending $6.5 million on Trippier when Botman should be back from his ankle injury in pretty quick order at 4.5.
Yeah, it was Trippier. Or if not, because of the price, Botman.
I really blew you out of the podcast there, Sam.
Yeah, I got, you know, if I put Botman ? Injured, but that would be my kind of
welcome to the big league, Sam.
No kidding, but you know, you've got your Haaland, Foden, Alvarez to assess, maybe a City defender.
Yeah,
you've got your Spurs guys, and Bomo's a definite.
Yeah.
Maybe at least one of the Arsenal midfielders. And then, you know, then your normal people thinking like who's exciting as well. Ward Prowse is quite exciting. I'd love to be able to get him in. Excitement is definitely definitely there.
I agree. Yeah, Ward Prowse is kind of in the same conversation. He's fighting for that same position in their squads as Mbomo, sort of already has locked down. He is the Swiss Army fantasy asset this season, and the sense is Mbomo is gonna be that for the entire season. So I agree. I feel like I'm missing out not having him in. And I think Foden to Mbomo is weirdly like a pretty obvious move to make. Lower ceiling, but the sheer consistency that Brentford's gonna deliver. And I think Mbomo, like his value might only get better once Tony comes back and Bomo's like in full season match fitness and has a buddy to play off of. So, all right, Sam, no better place to leave it than Brian and Bomo. I think we picked up on a lot of clues that the season has served us enough that it will fight the international break blues that we're sure to be feeling come Saturday morning. How are you going to spend the break? Sam, what do you got cooking?
I am going to my 6-year-old's football tournament on Saturday.
Oh,
what more would you want, right?
What's her team name?
She plays for a local Norwegian professional football players, one of his first childhood teams, Rosaland.
Up the Rosaland. So that's what we'll say. I want that. I want to make that hashtag go viral during the break up the halls.
I'll arrange you a scarf.
What do the fans, what do the ultras cheer at Roseland matches?
There's actually a song. They have a song which is played. So I can also kindly share that with you to play on repeat over the international break.
Fantastic. Send it my way. I'll put it at the end of the podcast. All right. Well, good luck to Roseland FC. I hope it's a great tournament for you and your daughter. Stay tuned. Always Cheating. We'll be back next week in our usual time slot, Sunday night, Monday morning. Josh and I will talk about our Game Week 5 decisions and any news coming out of the international break. Again, if you want to become a Patreon supporter of the pod, just go to patreon.com/alwayscheating, where you can access our Discord chat forum and get access to an extra podcast each week. Now's the time when we thank our producers. Sam, I'm about to put you on the spot. I see your eyes lit up. You're opening up the document. The pressure's on. Give us those producer names.
Here we go. So thank you very much, Mike DiPietro, Trevor Ingerson, our buddy Chris Howell, Babas Kuhn, James Holland, Dave Wagner-Lodol, Nick Wright, Lazarus Yenos, Jesse Halstead, Bruce Kerr, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Todd Byerly, Andy Portlock, at FPL Merch.
There's no way to put a Norwegian spin on at FPL Merch, is there?
Kerry Swanson, Jefferson Turner, Buffalo Wild Mings, Francis Moore, Sam Shower?
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Caleb Robbie, Valiger Paulson Kruger, Alex Holmcomb, James Keedley, The Saint, Bob Fox, Craig Dak Jackson, Charlene F. Kadakia, you've practiced this.
Yep.
Terence O'Donnell, Paul Herzig, Heath Cram, Thomas Tisloff, Noah and Louise, Travis Grant, Julia Penner, Linus Winstrom, Dan Parsons, James C., Matthew Skinner, Frode Jakobsen, Brennan, Daniel Hart, and our new producer, Lolly.
Well done, Sam. That was brilliant. Yes. All right. Big thanks to all of our producers at the top tier. Rate, review, subscribe wherever podcasts are found. Follow us on social media. For all this information and more, go to our website, alwayscheating.com. Sam Danby Bailey, you are a legend in the United States. You're a legend in Wales. You're a legend in England. And now you are a legend in Norway. Thank you for joining me on Always Cheating. Any last words?
Thank you very much for having me.
Brilliant. Humble as always. All right, everyone. Enjoy the break. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.